on SOFpodcast.com, iTunes, and on Square One Football Radio. This is The Sound of Football.
Hello and welcome to The Sound of Football. Welcome back. We've had a nice week's break. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you didn't miss us too much. We've got someone who took 2 weeks off. Yes, Terry's back again. Hello, Terry.
Hello, Graham. Hello, listeners.
And of course it's me, and Jan is here as well. Hello. Just to make up all the three of us.
What are you doing?
You're fiddling with your phone. Phone's off. What do I say? There's one simple rule. Phone's off. Phone. Except my one, because we're recording on it.
Okay. Sorry. Phone off.
Yes. Right. Okay, I'm not going to restart. We're just going to go ahead. No one's going to notice that. This week we're going to talk about the World Cup qualifying, because we're right in the middle of the playoff stage at the moment. Right, or the final eight berths are still up for grabs. Technically up for grabs. A couple of the fixtures are pretty much done and dusted. But what we're going to do is we're going to read through the list of teams that have qualified for the World Cup. And we're going to be raising our eyebrows, stroking our chins, and going, "Oh, yes, well, yes, I didn't know they were doing so well for themselves." And then sort of look,
basically the next half hour.
That's basically the next half hour. You know, we're not going to try and kid you that we've got some massive insight on Honduras or
Costa Rica.
We'll try and at least sort of like make it sound as if we know something. So
colour.
Yeah. Just go with it. It'll be fine. So, did any of you see any of the playoffs over the weekend, or did you just sit and watch the England match instead?
Yeah. I didn't actually. I didn't even watch the England match. If I'm being honest with you,
I'm guilty of that as well.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
Well, I have an ITV embargo, so you're allowed to not watch them. Less. I'll be watching obviously the game tomorrow, Tuesday. But yeah, I went for a curry instead, if I'm being honest.
It was a very nice one.
I'll tell you about it afterwards. I'll tell you about it afterwards. It was all very hyperline and complicated. Funny curry house. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The listeners don't want to hear about my curry.
They might do.
Yeah. All right. They can ask me on Twitter about my curry.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Yes. And be sure to do that. The contact details through any media channel are at the end of the podcast, as usual. What happened was in Europe, at least, there were four playoffs for the final positions there. The standout fixture, I think, from that list of fixtures was Sweden against Portugal, which ended up with a 1-0 win for Portugal, which means they go tomorrow night, as it is, as we record on Monday, with the fixture finally poised. So I suppose this is it. Everyone was looking at and they're thinking, this is Ronaldo versus Ibrahimovic. So one of those is going to miss out on the World Cup. Who would you rather see miss out on the World Cup?
Oh, I probably would have to say Ronaldo. But I mean, that's just a conceit, because, you know, he's a bit of a hate figure. I mean, really? Also, yeah, you may have heard already.
I never knew it was as strong as hate.
Okay, I didn't say a winker. Bit of a hate figure.
Yeah,
2006 and all that.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, okay, maybe so. I mean, he has got his fans, in fairness, so, I mean, and he is a fantastic player. But Portugal haven't really been that hot, and you get the impression, you know, without knowing a great deal, that Ronaldo's kind of carried that team. You do wonder whether or not maybe they need a bit of a kick up the backside by not qualifying. Mm. Having said that, it does look good for them to qualify, so, you know, that doesn't really matter.
Yes, but for one team that doesn't look so good for qualifying is France.
France,
yes. They're 2-0 down to Ukraine.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Well,
it is wonderful.
That's one way of looking at it. So, but do we think France could have got it to overtake Ukraine?
Yeah, I do, but because...
Do you think they deserve to?
Well, I mean, that's open to question, really. I mean, they do have some fine players, don't they?
Well, Well, they don't have a lot of support. I was one of my many foreign publications I read every day. I was reading The Parisienne this morning, and I wasn't. I read this in The Guardian. But when I was reading The Parisienne this morning, I saw this in The Guardian. It's a complete lie. Only 18% of French fans are going to bother even, you know, following them for the rest of their doomed campaign, they think. And that's something for a proud nation.
Yeah, it is a peculiar situation now, and much of it, I think, it can be laid upon the ethnic balance of the French nation at the moment. I think that there's a lot of people over there who perhaps maybe hail from other parts of the world originally and perhaps feel less...
a lack of identity?
It could be. It could be that. I hope that's not too controversial an opinion to venture. But also, I mean, in fairness, there's this conception that they've had this system where they produce some very talented players, but they don't seem to be able, apart from obviously France 98 and then Euro 2000, they've kind of wasted that talent. They haven't been able to turn it into a force to be reckoned with, given how much strength there is and, you know, how good some of those players are. It's also a peculiar arrangement. They're not like England, for instance, who, you know, really aren't that good. And, you know, no one's really that, you know, surprised when they don't play that well. But it is a constant surprise that France don't seem to be able to get themselves together. If they played with the same kind of passion and cohesion as maybe the Italians did, for instance, then, you know, they would definitely win more stuff, you'd think. But so, yeah, it's a peculiar arrangement. I'm not sure how I feel about them not qualifying. I mean, the Englishman in me thinks it would be very, very funny. But, you know, the football fan, you know, does feel that, you know, there are players worth watching there.
They are good comedy value at these events as well. I mean, and they're far more for far more value than Ukraine will be, because Ukraine will go there and there will just be...
Well, they'll be Ukraine, won't they?
Yes. and we all know how they've been in recent tournaments.
In subsequent tournaments, yeah, exactly. They've been not much to... They haven't really been that much. Even when Shevchenko was in his pomp, they weren't that much fun to watch, Ukraine. And no. They're certainly... You know, they're okay. They've got some handy players as well. But
the other ties for European qualification are Greece against Romania. Greece took a 3-1 win at home there. The Romania will be hoping that their away goal will be enough to give them something to fight back with. And Iceland and Croatia ground out a 0-0 draw. So everything's still to play for in that
tie. That's a remains an intriguing one, obviously, because Iceland, you know, never having qualified and being such a small nation. We talked about this when we talked about it before, so I won't dwell on it. But that one definitely, you would expect Croatia to do that. But apparently they changed their coach. They sacked their coach after the regular qualifying period, and then they got the new guy in. I mean, I don't know whether that's the right way of going about things. See what happens there. So it could yet be a surprise there.
Well, the other playoffs that are going on around the world at the moment, there are two playoffs in Africa, one of which is pretty much done and dusted. That's the one between Ghana and Egypt. Ghana take a 6-1 lead into the second leg. And the final one is Burkina Faso versus Algeria, and Burkina Faso have a 3-2 lead, so that one is very, very tightly poised there.
Yeah, and Algeria, you know, set to, if they do go that, they will be probably the only team from North Africa to make it.
They will be the only one from North Africa.
Is unusual, because North African teams are traditionally quite strong, aren't they?
Yeah. The rest of North Africa is pretty much preoccupied with
it's an interesting
civil strife.
Yeah, they've got other things on their mind, it's fair to say, than football. Yeah,
But a very strong contingency from Africa as it is, because the Cameroon and Nigeria and Ivory Coast, and by the looks of things, Ghana.
Yeah,
all going there. All the four sort of real big names of African football. Really.
Absolutely. Yeah. No changes there. And I think there are those who will be quite reassured to see those guys in there, because they would certainly lend a degree of World Cup pedigree that might benefit them, you know, in terms of getting through to the second round. And a lot of people would obviously quite like African teams to do better in World Cups than they ordinarily do for all kinds of reasons.
Mm. Burkina Faso could be the second team to that will be making their debut at a World Cup if they qualify against Algeria. They will be debutants along with Bosnia, because it looks like Uruguay are going to ease through against Jordan, and also Mexico are going to ease through against New Zealand. Both those sides scored 5 goals in the first leg, and only New Zealand managed to get 1 goal back. So looking down now at the list of qualifiers, I'll read them out now as in the order of which they qualified. Brazil as hosts, Japan, Australia, Iran, South Korea, Netherlands, Italy, Costa Rica, United States, Argentina, Belgium, who everyone's talking about, Switzerland, ranked 7th in the world, Germany, Colombia, Russia, Bosnia, England, Spain, Chile, Ecuador, Honduras, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, and Cameroon. What do we think of that lot?
I'm looking forward to a potential... I know this is cheap, but I am cheap. Looking forward to a potential Iran versus the United States.
Was one in France in 98.
We had one in 98, which the Iranians won, if you remember.
But there wasn't the tensions that exist now. There were tensions, but
Were dancing in the streets of Tehran after that game. Under pain of death, of course. But, I'm joking. I'm not sure that's not the case.
But, no, it absolutely was the case. No, but of course they weren't about to
make merry under pain of death.
America wasn't poised to attack them as they were just a few months ago.
We'll have to sort of hush any talk of drones during that game, I think.
The potential for tasteless jokes is almost unlimited there, and you can be certain that we'll be mining that potential vigorously.
Yes, we will be your official World Cup partner for tasteless jokes.
Tasteless joke based on lazy national stereotypes. Welcome aboard.
Which is my speciality, actually. Very, very good at that.
Talking about tasteless jokes, though. Jan, you saw something rather interesting in the paper, wasn't it? Was you were flicking through The Guardian, didn't you, sir?
I did, yes, I did. This is quite a serious point, actually. It's not tasteless at all. All right, it's fairly tasteless. Yeah. But one of the stadia that's been constructed with all the money that they have in Qatar is called the Al Wakra Stadium, mm-hmm. which bears a striking resemblance to
a lady garden.
A lady garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've subsequently seen a picture of this thing on the internet.
It's magnificent, isn't it?
Look, it's huge. I must say that much.
It certainly is.
I don't know if it closes up when the weather's inclement.
When it's got a headache.
And I don't know how easy it is to find Ro G.
Almost impossible. Almost impossible. Some would say that there isn't one.
What would be great is if they actually did say, right, okay, since you raised this whole thing, we're going to not have a Ro-G. Like a lot of buildings don't have a Ro-G, like have a level 13, do they? We're not going to have a
Ro-G. I mean, it would be great if it would turn out to be the Brazilian home ground for the tournament.
Well, actually, it could be a Brazilian one. It definitely could be a Brazilian one. There's no foliage around the area.
We've already started the tasteless jokes for this one. This is another 2 World Cups away, this one. Yeah. So, but then again, I suppose if you have a load of money, if you've got that amount of money, then face it, you're going to build it whatever shape you down.
Well, there's a lot of repressed sexuality out there, isn't there? Well, maybe there's an architect out there who's just thinking, I just want to see
the stadium's not been built though, right? It's still in construction. presumably.
I don't know that. That was the extent of my research. I mean, my research didn't go past the picture.
Before you know, the migrant workers.
I don't know. I mean, I think perhaps someone just walked into the architect's office. You know, when he didn't know, and he said, "Oh no, I'm just think on the spot. What are you doing? What are you getting your deck cut off?"
Yeah, well, if you haven't seen it, it is the kind of picture that you will want to delete your history after you've had it.
Yeah, don't look at it at work.
Just not safe for work.
It's the sort of thing you can say, it's not what it looks like. Because it really isn't what it looks like. It's actually a football stadium. All this talk of Lady Gardens aside, I suppose we do have to answer the question, you know, how England are going to do in the World Cup.
We don't really.
No, that's true. We don't have to answer that at all, do we? We can watch them play. We can watch them play a German B team on tomorrow night.
We'll play German
and lose
German B tomorrow. Yeah. Well, there'll be a smattering of A players, but Dortmund are playing Bayern Munich on the following Saturday. So three Bayern Munich players have been sent home. No Dortmund players have been sent home, but the Dortmund players presumably will have that game very much on their mind.
Yeah,
the ones that are remaining.
Yeah,
With the exception, of course, of Roman Weidenfeller, who at 33 is making his debut in goal for the national team.
Ah.
Because Manuel Neuer has been sent home, and there's all kinds of conspiracy theories about. Well, not all kinds of theories, because there's no conspiracy theories at all. They are direct accusations of favouritism from the national team coach. So there's no kind of, what's good? This is a little bit fishy. No, there's nothing like that. It's like, you are biased towards Bayern Munich.
Yeah,
because German fans basically think that the German football establishment is biased in favour of Bayern Munich. That's the kind of thing that they have there. It may well be true. But as it happens, Manuel Neuer, Philipp Lahm, and I think Mario Götze have been sent home, whereas no Dortmund players have been sent home. Mesut Özil has been sent home, sorry. So it's only two Bayern players. Götze, I think, is staying. I think it's possible that he may start.
Mm.
But he won't be trying that hard.
I don't think
any of the team have to try that
Götze
hard.
Particularly, because of course he came from Dortmund last season. So for him, this game is big, and it's in Dortmund Stadium as well.
But of course he doesn't need it, frankly.
Although there's opportunity, of course, for England is to capitalise and get a morale-boosting win. Yep. Nope. I didn't fall for that one either. But you know,
it'll be an empty victory.
How
friendly games tend to be empty anyway.
On a serious note, though, how badly is the long term injury to Khedira going to
affect? Sami Khedira may well not be available for the World Cup,
yes.
which represents a significant blow for Gem, because he is an excellent midfielder and a very very experienced midfielder, and very much at the peak of his powers. He tore his ACL. In the game against Italy, and he's almost certainly not going to be around for the World Cup.
For a while, yeah.
I mean, even if he's fit for the World Cup, whether or not he will be match fit and ready to go, I don't know. I know it's very likely that Jogi Löw will look for in other areas. I mean, there's no shortage of deep-line midfielders in the German national team that he can pick on. I mean, certainly Sven Bender, Lars Bender, either of those two will be great. Gundogan when he's fit. Toni Kroos plays as a deep-line midfielder. Philipp Lahm, even though he's a full-back, has been playing as a defensive midfielder for Bayern Munich, while they've had some injury problems to Martinez and Thiago Alcantara. So they are, they're in good shape in that respect, but Khedira gives them that stability and the fact that he has been there and he's cemented into that squad. He's a real linchpin of that squad. It's going to be a significant blow to Germany that he's not going to be available, if indeed that is the case.
So there, yeah. I'm not sure what either team is going to learn.
From the match
on Tuesday.
There's not even any goal line technology that they can have an argument about.
That's not like an England Germany game.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, it used to be, is it?
Well, I mean, at least you know we can certainly look forward. Hopefully, to maybe there'll be some goal line. That's the only thing to really look forward to. I mean, I'm only watching this game myself, to be honest with you, because we're going to be covering it for my German podcast. So.
Right.
But I mean, if I'm being honest with you, I probably shouldn't be saying this, but I probably would not be watching this game. I'd probably be watching one of the World Cup qualifiers if it was up to me.
But, yes.
Well, it is up to me. It's my
turn. And we suggest that you do the same, listeners.
Yeah, we suggest that also. We previewed that pointless medley enough.
But talking about German internationals, Didi Hamann had a bit of pop at England, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's worth bearing in mind Didi Hamann lives in England and spent a good portion of his career in England. And I mean, you know, he's as English as apple pie, apart from the fact that he's German. So, I mean, what was interesting about what he said was that it was coming from somebody who knows England very well and knows England's sporting culture, and I sense cares actually quite deeply for England and for his country, because that's where he's at. And he wrote a piece for The Independent. I should provide this by saying that apparently he's got a book coming out. This may be entirely coincidental.
Usually is.
It was mentioned, strangely enough, in the piece, but again, as a pure coincidence. But he pointed out the example of Paul Gascoigne's yellow card in the World Cup in 1990, and how he pretty much fell to pieces immediately after that when he realised that he wasn't going to play in the final.
Yeah.
And that what he should have done is he should have picked himself up and got on with the rest of the game, because there was still a game to be won.
Mm.
And of course, as we all know, that is not a game that England won. They lost on penalties. And he compared that to Michael Ballack, who in 2002 had the same fate. He picked up a yellow card and performed and led his team to victory in that semi-final and into the final. And he said that in Germany, Paul Gascoigne would not be remembered with any kind of fondness, because that kind of reaction would is contrary to sort of the notion of German sporting culture. And that what he should have done is he should have put the team's interest before his own and just got on with it, won the game, and then he could have gone into the dressing room and had a good cry then. Mm. But that's not what he did. And I think his broader point was that there is this difference between English sporting culture, where we're too, perhaps a little bit too concerned by individuals and less so the team. And ultimately, this is one of the reasons why we don't succeed. We've got the players. Mm. We do actually have the players, but we don't necessarily have that team mentality and that willingness to make sacrifices in order to win, which all sounds terribly German when I say it out like that.
Well, it does. And my view on that is that his comments, given that he used Paul Gascoigne as the example, are, I think, pretty scandalous and out of order. Because given the issues that fella's have been through since... if you were looking at that game in isolation, fair enough. But considering he probably was at a very fragile state of mind then anyway, because he was probably his alcoholism was probably in its infancy. And to use that as an example, I know you're just quoting him, Terry, but I think that is absolutely scandalous, and I really don't think you should use that.
You didn't read it, so I may not be entirely bringing across what his meaning there. I think it's probably fair to say that this is an example of how English people perceive sportsmanship and sporting virtue, that Gazza is regarded as something of a hero. It doesn't necessarily, I don't think he was necessarily saying that Paul Gascoigne should have done things differently, because Paul Gascoigne is who he is, and you're quite right to point out has gone on. We know what kind of a life he's had since then. But having said that, there was a personal element to it which perhaps, from a certain point of view, could be seen as a bit low when you consider.
Yeah, just a bit tasteful, I think. Really, I think there's probably a lot of other examples.
You can obviously, but I mean, I think there's something, and I'm sure there are people who probably felt that it was a bit tasteless. Under the circumstances.
But of course, in these difficult times, we have to do everything we can do to sell our books.
This is true. We do live in austere times.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we do have to take every step possible, no matter how cheap.
Yeah, and you know what? We've just given his book, 2 minutes of time on this incredibly successful and well-listened podcast.
Yeah.
No doubt that's worth a...
Yeah, exactly. So who's a schmuck, eh?
Well, look, do you know what? To balance things out, Uli Hesse has re-released... and updated his book Tor, A Story of German Football, which is one, which is the definitive book on the history of the German game. And that's coming out this week, I think, or next week. So to balance things up, I'm going to plug that, because that is a book that's well worth reading. Well, and that is a Sound of Football endorsement.
There you go. Yeah, we give that our 6 thumbs up.
Damn right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Man's doing that as well.
That sounds like something I'd like to read.
Brilliant book.
Yeah.
I can definitely recommend.
Yeah, and it is in English.
Oh yes, it's in English.
Yeah. I was planning on getting it as an audio book. And if it was in German, that would be a very boring 16 hours.
No, you
get some rather interesting looks on the train, though, wouldn't you, if you were listening to it, like, you know, out loud.
Yeah.
But I don't know why you'd do that. But yes.
Yeah. I think if I was listening to anything out loud on the train, I'd get some pretty interesting looks.
Yeah, I'd turn that fucking thing down.
Yeah.
You see, we're trying to be miserable.
That said, you probably know the results of these playoffs by the time you listen to this podcast anyway, but we don't, so we've probably shown ourselves up with our ignorance here. But anyway, lots of fun still to be had. There's a World Cup draw on December the 6th. Beforehand, we're going to be doing a fake draw, because we know you love them so. So we'll be going through every minute detail with everything you can expect from the draw that will be made.
All the razzmatazz. Lots of dancing girls.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Lots of celebrities, washed up players. Maybe we'll get Gazza down and Dietmar Hamann.
And then set them on each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Bite. But until then, we've got another pod coming next week. We will be there for that one, hopefully. Stay tuned, because, yes, Sound of Football Top Trumps is back. After the music. So from me this week, Graeme Sibley, Jan Bilton and Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter at soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Welcome back to Sound of Football Top Trumps. If you remember last time, Jan won again. He's now on an impressive run now, and he's looking to dominate the game. Jan, will this run just go on and on?
I'm quietly arrogant.
Quietly arrogant, yeah.
I think it's going to be, it's going to be a good one, I think. We're feeling positive over here.
Yeah. Terry?
Well, I never go into a game expecting to lose, until now.
Fighting talk there from Terry.
That's surrendering talk.
And listeners, I'm looking at your card right now, and quality, there's quality written all over it. But, you know, this game... It's a cruel game.
It's a stats game.
Jan, we may as well let you start off then.
Franck Ribéry.
Yes.
Career goals, 97.
What's your
one? Modric, 59.
Mesut Ozil, 38.
See?
He's done it again.
That's four in a row.
This is why this game gets stats, statistics in football is wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't hear you saying that when you won the first 3 games.
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
Because I didn't believe that at the time.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've changed my position since then on account of my losing.
Okay.
At the time.
Okay.
That's fine.
Well, there you have it. We've the game rolls on. with the same amount of sportsmanship and fair play that we've grown accustomed to. Until next time, listeners, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yeah, bye.